I'm Ralph. I think most of you have met me already. And I'm glad you're here today because something we didn't finish talking about yesterday that relates to the Cascades and why they're here in terms of geology is plate tectonics. So today is going to focus on plate tectonics. But since I used to, well, the first time I came to Holden a few years ago and I taught ice, I wasn't thinking about how many people are not from around here, so when I would say things like Vancouver Island or Olympic Peninsula, I assumed everyone knew what I meant, but I'm not going to assume that. So we're going to have a little geography lesson first, because we're going to apply plate tectonics. We'll talk about plate tectonics in general, and then we'll do a little hands-on model of it as well. And I have a handout, one page of a textbook for it to look at a little bit later. But we're going to come back and focus on Pacific Northwest plate tectonics. So this is supposed to be Alaska, which goes off into the Aleutian Islands. Aleutian Islands. This is British Columbia, BC as we call it. So Canada's up here. This is Puget Sound. Okay, so Seattle's right here. And we are about here. We're about here. In the Cascades. So the Cascades. Like that. And in Canada, it spreads out into this big mountain range. And it goes up into the Alaska Range and so on. A lot of mountains. There's a little range, there's coast ranges separate from the Cascades. So this is the Cascades. Okay, and then there's coast ranges. Actually, down when you go from, well, hang on, okay, here's Washington. This is the Columbia River right here, roughly. So Washington State is up here.
And the coast ranges extend down through Oregon as well as California.
They go down into California, yeah. They get jammed up and connect up with the Cascades in the Klamath Range, going from Oregon into California. So here's Oregon. So we got Washington, Oregon, California. Okay. So let's see. Puget Sound, near Olympic Peninsula, is up here on the other side of Puget Sound, and then there are Rocky Mountains. Various places all the way down to Mexico. They don't all connect through. And there's a big area in here, the Columbia Plateau, where it flattens out. Okay, so we're right about here. All right, I'm going to erase this in a minute. So when I talk about the coast ranges, if I do bring them up, that's out on the Pacific coast. And the Cascades run from, well, actually, what geologists call the Cascades, or what geographers too, are they only go from southern British Columbia to a certain area in Northern California. They only go where there are volcanoes of a certain type. Here's Lassen Volcano, Lassen Peak in California. Mount Shasta in California. There's some in Oregon, like Mount McLaughlin. There's one with a big hole and a lake in it. This is Crater Lake. There's some others. There's Mount Hood near Portland. Mount Adams. Mount St. Helens. Oops, put a hole in it. And Mount Rainier, Glacier Peak, Mount Baker, a couple others up to Mount Garibaldi. These are all active or dormant but recently active volcanoes, and they go from here to here and they don't go anywhere else. So the Cascades are, they have volcanoes. However, if you look around here, none of these mountains are volcanoes. You gotta hike for a long day up to Cloudy Pass, and then if you could get up there, ride a donkey or whatever it takes, up to Cloudy Pass, just 15 miles or 20 miles up the trail, and you'd come over the pass and you'd see one of these big glacier-covered cone-shaped volcanoes, Glacier Peak. It's right over there, but we don't see it from here. So most of the mountains are not volcanoes, but what characterizes the Cascades is this chain of volcanoes. And we'll come back at the end and relate this to plate tectonics. All right. Okay, so to go over plate tectonics, the general idea, what I want you to do is picture the Earth, the whole Earth, a sphere, pretty much, pretty close, and then picture the layers in the Earth. So what layers do you think of? Yeah.
The crust. The mantle and the iron core.
And the core, exactly. Okay, and those are the standard layers that we're taught, and those are thought to, those are the correct layers, very good. The mantle is denser than the crust, I meant to bring an apple, that's what I forgot. The crust is very thin compared to the rest of the Earth. So I've taken my giant scimitar and sliced the Earth in half, and the crust is thinner than this line, okay? This line is a lot thicker than the crust. The core is pretty big. Not like that. The core is pretty big. The mantle is the biggest volume. Okay. So mantle, core, crust. Okay. Now to think about plate tectonics, forget that. Wipe it out of your head, pretty much. Okay? Because plates carry the crust, but they're more than the crust. They're part of the mantle too. So you see these divisions, they're chemical. The composition of the crust has more oxygen, more aluminum, more kind of lighter elements than the mantle does. The mantle's denser and also has a different chemistry, and the core is very iron-rich, so it's chemical. Core, mantle, and crust are chemically distinct. Okay. But the plates don't care about the chemistry. Plates care about what's strong and what's weak, regardless of the chemistry. So if you look at the outer part of the Earth, let's see. So we slice the Earth open. We're looking at what's inside the Earth. And there's this outer layer known as the lithosphere. Some of you have heard of that, right? So the lithosphere includes the crust and part of the mantle. So here's a lithospheric mantle. Here's continental crust. And here's oceanic crust. And it's not exactly the scale. The continent's a bit thick. The oceanic crust is a bit thick. So more of lithosphere consists of the mantle part than the crust. But these two are glued together pretty much. The crust is strapped in with the lithospheric mantle underneath, and they form a very rigid, coherent body. Okay? And so for planktonics, it's better to think about the lithosphere. The lithosphere is the outer layer of the Earth, including the crust in the lithosphere. And the lithosphere consists of a bunch of plates. The lithosphere is the plates. The lithosphere is broken up into about 13 big plates, like I mentioned yesterday, and a few smaller ones, and they're all moving, okay? So what I really need is, I don't have PowerPoint. I apologize for that if the graphics would have helped you, but picture these plates forming the outer layer of the Earth and picture them all moving. Everyone's moving.
In the same direction or back and forth?
They're all moving. They continue moving in the same direction for millions of years, but none of them are moving in the same direction as the one next door. So, all right. So if this is part of a plate, and this plate is moving, then the gist of most of the important things, or most of the exciting, I shouldn't say most of the important things, a lot of the exciting things in geology come from what happens where the plates meet up with each other, the plate boundaries, okay? So, and there's three basic things that plates can do where they meet with each other. I like it when things can be made simple. And the Earth kind of makes these things work simply, because for slabs to move as part of a sphere, there are constraints in the physics of it from the geometry of the sphere. So, by the way, if I show you a two-dimensional image, it's not really accurate because the Earth is part of, these plates are part of a sphere, so it's going to be distorted. But anyway, one plate, another plate. They can move apart, diverge. They can come together, converge. Or they can slide side by side in opposite directions, and that's about it. Now, they can come in together at a bit of an angle sometimes, but when they spread apart, they usually go pretty close to straight apart from each other. And when they go side by side, they're going exactly side by side, opposite directions, pretty darn close. So, let's see. So here is your one page from a textbook. Unlike David Johnson, I'll allow for online quizzes. So this summarizes some of what goes on and how we think about these three types of plate boundaries. Okay, three types of plate boundaries, boundary type. So there's divergent plate boundaries where the two plates are spreading apart. Now, what do you think happens if the Earth keeps cracking and spreading apart? What's going to happen in the middle there? What is it? What do you think?
The part where they're spreading apart might be lower.
That's right. It forms a rift valley where things have dropped down along faults. But it doesn't drop down forever. Those cracks can only get so deep before something else comes up. And what is that?
Lava.
Yeah, lava. So, yeah. So, exactly. Exactly. So, lava keeps coming up there where the two plates are spreading apart and comes up and solidifies either as lava on the surface or as intrusions a little ways down below the surface. So, as the plates spread apart, new rock, remember the rock cycle, those of you that were here yesterday, new rock keeps coming in and forming new plate. So it's a constructive, the divergent plate boundaries are a construction zone where a new plate is built, and it keeps spreading apart, and new material comes in from magma and lava and solidifies and keeps adding to it. Okay, I know some of you might have read about or heard about plate tectonics, where they can see how this happens by the way the rocks, as they form, at these divergent plate boundaries, they take on the magnetism of the Earth's magnetic field because in these igneous rocks there are some iron, some magnetic minerals form, and when they form from the liquid magma or lava, they lock in like little compasses the direction of the Earth's magnetic field. So once the rock is cold and solid, that magnetic direction is locked in, and they can tell what, without much enough time to go into all of it, they can tell how, when the rock formed and how fast the plate was spreading and which way it's been spreading from those magnetic records. These are magnetic recordings that the Earth's crust makes, because it's the top layer of the plate, at these divergent plate boundaries. It makes a magnetic recording of what's going on. It goes back millions of years. Now the kind of crust that forms there, kind of plate that forms at the divergent plate boundaries, is the thin, dense, oceanic crust, plate with oceanic crust on it, okay? So that most of these divergent plate boundaries are out under the ocean, on the ocean floor, sometimes called mid-ocean ridges. Does anyone know a place on Earth where there's a country located at one of the rare places where one of these mid-ocean ridges comes up above the surface? Where? Tina, okay, what do you think?
Well, I don't know when
think where
comes.
Where came from.
Wyoming?
Not Wyoming.
But I know one that goes down.
You know one on the ocean floor?
Is it Iceland?
Iceland is right. Yay, wow. Maybe you can join me in lecturing here. Yes, Iceland. Now, how many people went to the talk about the those so-called Scandinavian countries? So there's Iceland. Geologically, it's on the Mid-Atlantic Ridge where the two plates. So the eastern half of Iceland is on the Eurasian plate. And the western half of Iceland is on the North American plate. So are they in NATO or not? You know that. But anyway. all right. And then transform plate boundaries. Anyone else? What's your name?
Hans.
Yeah. Anyone else besides Hans want to try this one? And then if not, we'll see if you know this one, okay? I don't mean to pick on you. But what's the most famous transform plate boundary in the world where the two plates are going side by side, opposite directions? Yeah, the San Andreas Fault. So a lot of people know that one. Several of you know that one. In California. So if you go to Los Angeles or Santa Cruz or San Diego, California, you've left the North American plate. You're on the Pacific plate, which here's the rest of North America. Here's that strip of California on the other side of the San Andreas Fault Zone, and it's going towards Alaska. But it doesn't go smoothly. It builds up a lot of stress from the plates trying to move. And it gets stuck for a while, and then it breaks, and there's an earthquake. So that's a transform plate boundary. Let me continue the table over. I mean, just in terms of arrows, the original plate boundary, the plates are going apart, so the arrows go apart. Transform plate boundary, side by side, opposite direction. That's just to show you which way it goes. Then there's the symbol that you'll see on a plate tectonic map. Okay, so these are traditional symbols. A double line shows where the divergent plate boundaries are on a plate tectonic map. Okay, this is a mid-ocean ridge. Plate on this side is going this way. Plate on this side is going this way. A giant strike-slip fault, known as a transform fault, has a line down the middle where the boundary is, and then it has half arrows showing which way the plates are going on either side. Okay, and then. Other stuff later. The third kind of plate boundary is the convergent plate boundary, to use the fancy name for it. It's where two plates come together. So, you know, the arrows show they're coming together. The symbol is, it's a line on a plate tectonic map with triangles or sawteeth or whatever on the upper plate, okay? So if this was a plate boundary on a map, there's one, because one plate will go down underneath the other plate, okay, where the two plates come together. So if this is a transform plate boundary, a convergent plate boundary, this is the top plate and this plate's going underneath it because the teeth are on the upper plate. So these are the symbols. And later, actually there's not going to be a quiz. You're going to do your homework tonight in class and you'll draw these symbols if you have a pencil or pen on a piece of paper. Okay, there, the geologists borrowing from the physicists who borrow from the engineers use these stress terms for what's going on in the crust and lithosphere at these plate boundaries. When the crust or lithosphere gets pushed or pulled or sheared, if it's getting pulled apart, they call that tension. Okay. If it's getting pushed in opposite directions adjacent to each other, that's shear. And if it's getting pushed together, that's compression. Except for shear, perhaps. Well, tension isn't obvious. I mean, when people say they feel that they're under tension, they don't necessarily mean that they're on the rack getting pulled apart. But this is what geologists, physicists, and engineers would mean. And then there are now these plate boundaries create major fault zones. They are major fault zones. And we don't need to go over these are the names of the types of faults, but we don't have time for all that. So, I'll mention them anyway. Normal faults, where the crust and lithosphere are pulling apart, and in the middle, things drop down along these inward sloping faults. Anyway, normal faults. Strike slip faults, like the San Andreas fault zone, side by side, opposite directions. And then thrust faults, where the crust is getting pushed together, and it climbs up on top of another part of the crust along a fault zone. So that's, anyway, that's a thrust fault. Okay, if I did go over. There are rock types, characteristics of these plate boundaries, which I'm not going to go over. And there are landforms created by the plate tectonic processes, like a mid-ocean spreading ridge. And in the mid-Atlantic, in one place, the mid-ocean spreading ridge comes up above and forms an island, known as Iceland. And a rift valley down the middle of each ridge. That's why they, I think, chose a double line. Does anyone know of a continent that's currently, apparently, starting to rift apart and may in the future open up a whole new part of the ocean in between if it keeps rifting apart? It's a big it's a continent with a rift valley zone.
Africa,
the African Rift Valley. That may be an incipient or a starting up new plate boundary that's separating the Horn of Africa from the rest of Africa. And it's rifting the continent apart. Now, and I mentioned how the magma comes up in the divergent plate boundary where things are cracking and spreading apart. That's a lot of volcanism. It's mostly on the ocean floor except in Iceland or the African Rift Valley. So we don't see much of that volcanism unless you watch a discovery show from those submersibles that go down to the mid-ocean spreading ridges and they show the lava coming out on the ocean floor. But there's a lot of volcanism at the divergent plate boundaries. There's usually none at the transform plate boundaries, except in that movie where the San Andreas Fault started erupting out of the La Brea tar pits or something. That was fiction. That was still fiction. Transform boundaries are not known in most cases to produce much volcanism. So in the San Andreas zone of California, you don't find any giant volcanoes or anything. You just find a big fault zone, for the most part. But convergent plate boundaries, in most cases, they are associated with volcanism. Most of the world's major threatening to human populations volcanoes, not all of them, but most of them, are at convergent plate boundaries. Not many people live on the ocean floor, so they don't, except in Iceland, and East Africa, they don't worry about the volcanism from divergent plate boundaries. But convergent plate boundaries, the Cascades, the Pacific Northwest coast, that's a convergent plate boundary. Okay, and there's a volcanic hazard here, Mount St. Helens, 1980. Lassen Peak erupted in around 1915 or 19 teens. Similarly to Mount St. Helens, 1980. and there will be more eruptions in the future. Remember the in Alaska, I showed the Aleutian Islands projecting out to the west, towards Russia, towards Siberia? That's a convergent plate boundary, and the Aleutian Islands are a chain of volcanic islands, and one of them has been erupting in the last few weeks. Mm-hmm. Nobody lives there. Or no, they did evacuate some people, that's right. Just a few weeks ago, a few people, I think it might have been, I don't know what they were doing there, on a remote, way over 1,000 miles from mainland Alaska, Aleutian Island, it started acting up volcanically, and they had to evacuate. But since it's only about 8 people, it's 1,000 miles from the Alaska mainland in the North Pacific, you might not have heard about it. Whereas Mount St. Helens, 1980, not so far from Seattle and Portland, and it ended up causing some human casualties. You've probably heard more about that one. Those are convergent plate boundaries. And the Mount St. Helens type of volcano is characteristic of those kind of plate boundaries. Okay? And other examples of that kind of volcano at a convergent plate boundary are Fujiyama or Mount Fuji in Japan. Well, all those ones I mentioned, the Cascades. Mount Hood, Mount Rainier, Mount Garibaldi, Mount Shasta, Lassen Peak, Mount St. Helens, Mount Rainier. Those are all the same type of volcano, a tall cone, generally thousands and often over 10,000 feet above its base, or over 3,000 meters. What are some other examples? What's that? Well, the Andes, but I don't know the names of all those. Think of some Spanish and Inca names for those volcanoes down there. I forgot what they are. In the Andes, the west side of South America, that giant mountain range, that's at a convergent plate boundary too, and that includes a chain of active volcanoes, which occasionally erupt. Mount Ruiz, R-U-I-Z, with an accent on the I, in Colombia, I think it is. That's caused problems in the last couple decades. That's just one example from the Andes of South America. Okay. In a perfect or a different plate tectonic lecture, you'd have nice images from PowerPoint or whatever, showing you a map of the world and where these things are. I don't have that. I don't have a whole textbook. But what I want to do is switch our focus here to, because yesterday I was talking about how geologists think, which is how anyone thinks with a certain amount of training in geology, and how scientists think. But and it includes a creative component, of course, science does. And so this little exercise we'll try here is based on a talk I once saw late in his life by J. Chuzzle Wilson, one of the inventors of the theory of plate tectonics back in the 1960s. By the way, he wrote a paper in 1960 arguing against the idea that the plates formed and spread away from the mid-ocean ridge just when, or 61 or 62, just when this idea was coming out. But geologists are free to look at the data and change their hypotheses and ideas, and so he did, and a few years later, he became one of the main idea creators of valid ideas, it turned out, in plate tectonics. He was trained in physics, and he taught at, I think, McGill University up in Canada. And to figure out what the plates were doing, he made paper cutouts on his desk and he moved them around. And he came up, that's how he figured out how the Hawaiian hotspot worked. That's how he figured out how transform plate boundaries work. By looking at the geologic evidence and then saying, well, how could that work? And messing around with it and saying, hey, it would go like that. With pieces of paper on his desk. That's what he said at his talk. So I have a very simple paper cutout model based on Wilson. And even though it's simple, this will lead somewhere that we want to, that I want you to go. Oh, but it's going to call on your, to really do it, it's going to call on your trains in kindergarten and paper cutting skills. You have to go this way.
It's just
my cane. Don't pick up and run with the scissors.
Are there any extras?
And So what the thing is, the goal here is to cut the triangle out, but and leave the rest of the paper whole. So don't cut into the paper to get to the triangle. We've nicked the corners of the triangle already to get to a start.
Yeah.
It doesn't work better if we had desktops, but you know, we get the idea pretty well.
I have one more for
so don't cut into the paper from the edge. Just cut the triangle half. Now, like I said, it's very simple, but we'll run with it once we get it working. Because this triangle labeled A, it's a plate. It's a tectonic plate. Okay? It's hundreds or a thousand miles across. It's part of the lithosphere. And what we're gonna do is this is where a desktop helps. But if you had it on a desktop or a tabletop, all you do is get it lined up. And over here, this boundary number two, you pull the triangle under it and to the right. So, let's see if I can get it to work. So it just goes like, so it goes sticking. And there's an earthquake. It goes like this. Is that working?
Yeah.
All right. Okay. So as you do that, as plate A moves under the other plate along boundary two, okay, you have all three types of plate motion at plate boundaries going on. Okay? So I want you to, because of what we're going to get to later. So, all right, so run plate A underneath plate B and to the right. Mine's real rough around the edges. Like that. Okay, so. Yeah, you gotta. So. Alright, and then remember, now we're gonna go from this tangible model that you can feel and play with, easier on a table than on your lap, but to a symbolic representation of it. Going back to that table we handed out for the types of plate boundaries. Okay? And we'll do this. This will be a group quiz, and if we pass it as a group, then everybody passes. Okay. And all right. So, when When plate A was going underneath plate B and being pulled to the right,
oh, I see.
What was happening at plate boundary one? And the choices here, it's a multiple choice to begin with, are divergent, transform, or convergent?
Divergent.
Is that the consensus here? Okay. All right. So as a symbol, I'm going to make this into a double line. Let's see. Well, I'll just hand it free. So I need to double up this line to represent a divergent plate boundary. And you can also add arrows to show which way the plates are going. So I'm doing it for you, though. It's a group exercise. Okay, so the two plates are spreading apart here. Now, in reality, this plate over here would also be going this way. It wouldn't just be sitting there while this plate went this way. Okay. Now, down along plate boundary three, let's skip to that one, is that divergent, transform, or convergent?
Transform.
And okay, if we follow instructions, if the plate followed instructions, was plate A moving this way to the right or this way to the left? To the right. That was my instructions. I don't know if I made them clear enough, but that's what I meant. So I'm going to put a half arrow that way. And then compared to it, the other plate goes this way. So there's your strike slip, transform plate boundary. Okay. And then this plate boundary number two, by elimination, you're good at taking quizzes. You know, the teacher's not playing any tricks.
No.
So it comes down to divergent, transform, or convergent. What is it?
Convergent.
Convergent. All right. So I'm just going to add. Okay, now which, if my instructions came across and you followed instructions, which was the upper plate? Plate B or plate A?
B.
B. B is the consensus. So I put the triangles on plate B. I'll just leave them open.
So is every plate composed of all three forms?
That's a good question. Think about it. I don't know of a plate running through a partial inventory in my head. I cannot think of a plate that doesn't have all three types of plate boundaries along its borders, but fewer as simple as this. Many of them have several transform portions of their boundary, several convergent portions of their boundary, and several divergent portions of their boundary. So if you look at the details of a plate around the edge, there's a lot of zigs and zags and changes in the boundary type. So none of them are as simple as this triangle. Okay, this is a bit simplified. But there's one that's almost as simple, and that's why I had to do this triangle, and that's there's off the west coast of Washington, Oregon, Northern California, Southern British Columbia, is a plate almost as simple called the Juan de Fuca plate. Juan de Fuca, did that come up yet? No. Juan de Fuca was an explorer, or Juan de Fuca was a guy from, I think, Spain or Italy. I think it was Italy, actually, even though he has a Spanish sounding name. Anyway, back in the, after Columbus, quote, discovered America, thought he was in India or Asia. In the following decades, other explorers came and tried to find fame and glory and claim new land and so on. And one guy wrote a publication saying he'd sailed up the west coast of North America and found a big inlet at 48 degrees north or 49 degrees north latitude. And his name was Juan de Fuca, at least that's what he was known as. And as last I checked, somebody should Google it, it's not clear if the guy ever really did make this trip. But he claimed that he did, and when Captain Cook and other explorers found an inlet at 49 degrees north latitude, it got his name. Actually, other Spanish explorers really did come even before Captain Cook. So I got the name, the Strait of Juan de Fuca. It's the opening from Puget Sound to the Pacific Ocean. That's the Strait of Juan de Fuca. Well, from that, they've given the plate out there off the coast the name the Juan de Fuca plate. So this could be a proxy. This could represent the Juan de Fuca plate. And this would be the Pacific plate here, if we're going to extend this metaphor. Pacific plate. And down here, Pacific plate. But if we're going to make this more real, we need to add, plate boundaries don't just usually end like that. There's another plate boundary here. And it's a strike slip plate boundary. Oops. Put the one over. This goes down into California. This is the San Andreas Fault Transform plate boundary. Okay, so the angle's a bit off. But this goes down, and remember, this is a two-dimensional screen that's representing the three-dimensional Earth. That's my excuse for distorting it. anyway, this goes down into California. This is the San Andreas Fault. And it comes up right here to, off the coast of Northern California, and it right along the coast of Northern California, and it ends at a place called Cape Mendocino, California, in Northern California. And then you hit this convergent plate boundary along the edge of the coast, and another transform plate boundary, but not the San Andreas, going out on the ocean floor. It's called the Mendocino Fracture Zone Transform Plate Boundary. So SAF, this is the San Andreas Fault. This goes down into California. And there's another one, another transform plate boundary up here going up across British Columbia, off the coast of British Columbia, a little ways out in the ocean, to Alaska. And it's called, there's this group of islands off British Columbia called the Queen Charlotte Islands. So it's Queen Charlotte Fault. And it's another strike slip fault, like the San Andreas, except it's off in the oceanic crust where it does less earthquake activity and people don't live there. And it goes up into Alaska and it switches over and it connects up with the Denali Fault in Alaska, which had an earthquake a few years ago that caused a miniature little wave, little earthquake wave on Lake Chelan, the Denali Fault up in Alaska. I mean, the wave was, they predicted there might be a siege type wave in Lake Chelan, and there was, and it was like 6 inches high or something. From that earthquake in California. Anyway, so now in reality, it's not a simple triangle. There's a zig here, and then it goes up to the north end of Vancouver Island, if you know where that is, off British Columbia. And the Canadians claim this little part of the real plate. It's not a simple triangle. It's got an extra section up here where there's a transform, and then the divergent plate boundary again. They call that the Explorer Plate. Canadians up in Vancouver and Victoria, I think they think of it as the Canadian plate. Maybe I'm wrong. And then there's another zig down here, and that, where it breaks out into, you know, so erase this, put another divergent plate boundary here, and then bring the transform in. Or, well, because I should do it here. So there's another plate down here with an offset, or another section of the plate. And people in California have claimed that, and they call that the Gorda plate. Okay. So I'm from in the middle, I'm from Washington, and I just lump them all together and call them the one. I mean, it's the Juan de Fuca plate and its associates, the Gorda plate and the Explorer plate, they used to be part of one much larger plate called the Farallon plate, and it's on its last legs. It's shrinking. This is North America. This is the North American plate. So I'm just going to write NAM for North American plate. NAP, excuse me, North American plate. So this is the North American plate. It's going this way. And as it goes, it's swallowing up the Juan de Fuca plate. And if you could backtrack in time, you'd find that there used to be, this plate went all the way down to Mexico and all the way up to Alaska. It was huge, okay? Now it's down to this remnant. Actually, there's another little piece of this, what used to be one plate that's been separated off of southwestern Mexico, but that's, we don't need to go there. We'll just stick with this part of it. Anyway, it's going kind of slowly. This is the convergent plate boundary, and and it's, I think, the slowest one in the world, or one of the, as far as I know, it's the slowest one in the world. The two plates are coming together at about 3 or 4 centimeters, just an inch or two a year, which is kind of slow. Okay. If you've ever read about plate tectonics, you might have heard that the plates move about as fast as your fingernails grow relative to each other, so. I don't know, do your fingernails grow that much in here? An inch or two? Okay. But this one is slow-growing fingernails. The one Topeka plate is coming in relatively slowly. And it's also not very big, so the oceanic part of it, the rocks that form at the ridge here and they spread away, by the time they get to the coast, they're not very old, and they're still pretty hot, which may affect how this boundary works. Because the last thing I need to talk about is there's a chain of volcanoes here, the Cascades. By the way, the Cascades go from Lassen Peak, California, to Mount Garibaldi, British Columbia, and you go past Lassen Peak, California, and there are no more volcanoes like that. You go past Mount Garibaldi in British Columbia, and there are no more volcanoes like that. The Cascade volcanoes go from here to here, and it's, you know, by a long shot, not a coincidence that this is where the Wanabika plate comes in as well. This plate coming in is making these volcanoes, including Mount St. Helens, Mount Hood, all the others, Aberdeen, Glacier Peak, up in here. So all these volcanoes in here. Oops. They run as for where this plate comes in. So the last thing to talk about is this particular type of convergent plate boundary. It's called, Hans, you know what kind of zone this is, where this kind of plate comes in and one goes into the other?
Okay.
It's a convergent plate boundary, but there's another word for it that starts with S. Anybody?
Subduction.
It's a subduction zone. Where two plates come together, if one plate has a continent on top of it, that is not going to go down into the Earth's interior because continents are thick and light rock, relatively. It's almost as if they float like giant rafts on the Earth's outer layer. So here comes a plate. It has thin, dense oceanic crust on it. And I need a continent to stick on here. Here comes another plate. It has a whole thick, light continent on it. When they get together, and one plate's got to give and go beneath the other, the one with oceanic crust goes down. How do they say that, like in competitive reality TV games, like, you're going down. Anyway, this plate goes down. It subducts back into the earth, and it gets recycled back into the earth. Because that was when they first discovered divergent plate boundaries, where the plates are forming and spreading, and new material keeps forming there. Then the question is, well, where does it go? The Earth isn't growing bigger. Well, at the other end, they're going down, and they're subducting back into the Earth. So, what's happening is, the Wanabika plate and the Explorer plate and the Gordon plate, they're going down beneath the edge of North America. And every subduction zone in the world has a chain of volcanoes. Let me back up still. Where two plates come together and one subducts beneath the other. There are many subduction zones in the world, and some come in and they go down at a shallow angle, and some come in and they go down really steeply, okay? Well, whatever angle they go down, when they reach a little over 100 kilometers, a little over 65, 70 miles deep, that's where the volcanoes form. So if a plate comes in at a low angle of subduction, it'll get 75 miles deep pretty far in, and the volcanoes will be back here. It comes in at a steep angle of subduction where it gets 75 miles deep close to that edge, and the volcanoes will be close to the leading edge of the subduction zone. Now, every other subduction zone in the world, so let me back up. We'll do a comparison and contrast. The Cascades have a chain of volcanoes just like every other subduction zone in the world. The plate tectonics show that there's a plate coming in with oceanic crust and going down beneath the edge of the other plate. It doesn't have to be a plate with continental crust on it to get subduction and a chain of volcanoes, but that's a common combination. If you get a continental bearing plate and an ocean crust bearing plate, the This is the one that's going to go down, this is the duct. But every other subduction zone in the world also has a trench along the edge. See, there's a trench forming there. Where this plate's going down, it makes it warps the Earth's surface down. But not the one Topeka plate. It's the one exception. It doesn't have a trench. For reasons that are not completely agreed upon, it's a slow subduction zone. It may be that the Columbia River has filled in that not very deep trench with sediments over the millions of years. So, yeah, the lack of a trench is one weird thing about the one Topeka plate. Every other plate has a deep trench on the edge of the ocean, or on the edge of the subduction zone on the floor of the ocean. In fact, you know, the deepest place in the oceans on Earth is the Marianas Trench, along the near the Marianas Islands in the southwestern Pacific Ocean, and that's a trench of a subduction zone, about 6 miles, 7 miles deep in the ocean. Okay, last thing I want to do in the time we have before I take questions is just make a little make a cross section, a sideways view of a subduction zone. Okay, so let's see if this works. Here is a plate with oceanic crust on it. It's coming in and it's going down. Okay. So this is subduction. It's very big. Subduction. Okay, and in the case of the Juan de Fuca plate, there's not really a trench here. And then it goes up into some mountains. And then it goes up into some more mountains. All right, so Juan de Fuca plate, North American plate. So this I did not include the ridge, the Juan de Fuca ridge, where the plate's forming and it's spreading this way, and it's coming in and it's going down like that. So yeah, this is a sideways view inside the Earth, okay? And this is the Coast Range in Washington State. This would be the Olympic Mountains. Olympic Mountains. And this is the Cascades. And here's Puget Sound in here. So if I put in ocean water, let me get green. So here's some ocean water, and a little bit in Puget Sound in here too. All right, so the Olympic Mountains are not volcanic. The Olympic Mountains, these are thrust faults where rocks have been shoved in beneath these other rocks. So, and all these rocks in the Olympic Mountains are pieces of an oceanic, of the ocean floor, of oceanic crust. So, this is where North America is growing, even as we speak. This is how continents, at least this is one of the ways the continents grow. Because the Olympic Mountains, geologically, they're not that old, they're a few tens of millions of years old, and they've been shoved in by pieces of this plate, getting stuck to the upper plate, and getting wedged in underneath and staying there. And then the subduction process just continues, and eventually another piece gets added. So this, it's been growing like this, the edge of the continent here along the Coast Range, by a process called accretion. Okay, and then over here in the Cascades, there's magma forming down here, and coming up and intruding. So magma. And if it comes to the surface, it can erupt as a lava, or it might blow up. So the bulk, the subduction zone gets around 70, 75 miles deep. I mean, the subducting plate gets deep enough here to set off a melting process, and the molten rock is less dense than the solid rock, so the force of gravity forces it up, and it works. works its way up into the crust, and it works its way up and forms volcanoes. And then the last thing is, well, I guess I'll stop there.
How about the Rockies? How did that come
in? Yeah, the Rockies. The Rockies, they're not, well, they have an interesting history, and a lot of the buildup of the Rocky Mountains, especially along thrust faults, was, it's way over here, a couple hundred miles, and even 300 or 400 miles, or even 500 or 600 miles inland to the, for the Rockies, okay? So, you know, you get across the Columbia Plateau. And even earlier, when a lot of the mountain building was happening, this subduction zone still wasn't, you know, it wasn't over there. It might have added material from about here to about here, from about the Cascades to the Olympic Mountains, during the time the Rocky Mountains have been formed. So the Rocky Mountains have always been a long ways in from the subduction zone, but a couple things are thought to relate this subduction process to the buildup of the Rocky Mountains. One is that, remember, the Guadalupe Plate used to be this huge plate that went most of the way to Asia, and it's come in over millions of years, and it's brought islands with it, and it's brought things as big as Japan with it, or even bigger, little mini continents and so on. And as it's come in with these other islands and things like that, and it's subducted, it's jammed some of these big things into the edge of North America, bigger than the Olympics. And some of those are called accreted terrains. And when a big terrain is accreted, that may send stress a long ways inland, especially during what's known as the Cretaceous period. Although I just saw a paper arguing that maybe it wasn't such a fast route of convergence. But by those magnetic stripes on the ocean floor, going back to 100 million years ago or so, that plate, it was bigger and it was moving a lot faster, 3 or 4 or 5 times as fast as it is now. And it was bringing big blocks of rock, bigger than the Olympics, in and shoving them in against the edge of North America. And that may have been enough to send stress, compressional stress, way inland across the Rockies and along thrust faults, build up the Rocky Mountains. Okay. Since then, the stress is no longer compressional in much of the Rocky Mountains. Since then, things have changed, and much of this, by the way, the subduction zone, when the plate was bigger and so on, ran all the way through California to Mexico. San Andreas Fault, only in the last 30 million years, only, I'm speaking like a geologist, has grown and replaced a subduction zone down there. And that has gotten rid of the compressional stress across the middle of the Rocky Mountains and turned it into, it's now relaxing and spreading out a little bit across the Rockies. So where there's earthquakes in the Rocky Mountains now, it's usually on a normal fault, the kind that happens when the crust is stretching apart, whereas the Rocky Mountains were originally built up along thrust faults from compression. So it went from getting scrunched and compressed in the Rockies, probably because of a faster scale of plate tectonics during that main stage, where it was pushing things all the way inland. And now it's relaxing and spreading out a little bit and still having some faults and tectonics. And then the other thing is, I never got to this. Underneath the lithosphere is a weak layer of the mantle known as the asthenosphere. Asthenos is supposedly Greek for weak, so it's the weak layer. And it's a very hot layer. It's not quite molten. It's solid, but it's weak, and it can get pushed around if over time. Anyway, underneath the Rocky Mountains, probably related to what used to be happening with subduction pushing all the way over there before it backed off to just in this area. There's a lot of hot asthenosphere that's risen up under the Rockies, and that heat, even though it's not causing much volcanism in the Rockies, except in the Yellowstone area, which is a different question, that heat is when the crust and the lithosphere get hot, they expand and they lift up. And so even though the Rockies are starting to relax and spread apart and sag down along the edges, all that heat in the crust is still keeping the average elevation high. The Rockies, you know, in a nutshell, let me just say the Rockies are very complicated. It's not easy to relate the Rockies to the subduction zone along the edge, but most geologists do think there are some connections there. Yeah, Bob.
What about Vancouver Island? That's non-volcanic, I think. Is that a continuation?
It is. I mean, why there's this break across the Strait of Juan de Fuca? Well, there's a big set of fault zones running through there. And that may have been where a lot of years of river and then glacial erosion occurred. But basically, the Vancouver Island is thought to be an extension of the Olympics and the Coast Range. That's right.
Now, the last two volcanoes, I think you said were about St. Helens and Lassen. Is that correct?
Yeah, the last two that erupted big.
Yeah. Now, they're fairly close, right?
No. Well, I mean, because Lassen's down in California.
Right. No, I know where Lassen is. I guess they're not close.
Yeah.
But so my real question is, can we predict where the next one's going?
Not until within a few months of it erupting, as far as I know. At least the U.S. Geological Survey would like to think that volcanoes, they do, before the magma breaks through to the surface and erupts, like what St. Helens did in 1980 and what they've seen other volcanoes like that around the world do since then, they start to bulge, they start to shake and have earthquakes, and the earthquakes especially take on a certain pattern that tells them the magma's rising up and the gas starts coming out, and based on the last 30 years, including Mount St. Helens, they usually have a few months, and then up to the actual eruption, they can almost say there's going to be a big eruption in the following week from these earthquake patterns and bulging in the mountain. So they can't say 20 years from now, 10 years from now, what's going to erupt. But if one is going to erupt, we'll probably have a minimum a few weeks and probably a few months of warning.
Did they have that from Mount St. Helens?
They did. But it started in the winter, about four or five months before it erupted. It popped out a little steam and ash erosion through the glacier. It's like, whoa, what's happening? So a bunch of geologists started moving in to see what's going on. And it didn't take long for them to detect that it was bulging. And then had more little mini eruptions. And by the time it erupted big, they knew something big was coming up when it finally went. They didn't know the day, but they knew it was up to something big.
Now, four or five years ago, we were in Portland,
It was extruding some thick lava into the crater, and they weren't sure what it was going to do. It even popped a little bit of ash out about 2 or 3 years ago.
Yeah.
So they had people back off for about a year. Now you can still can't go in the crater. Now you need the visitor centers again and hike up to the rim in the summertime. So, but one more question, and then we should end it.
As I look at my triangle here and I see A moving this way and you say they're both moving. Where is B as another end?
That's okay. Yeah. Oh.
And
well,
I think, you know, that looks to me like.
Yeah, that's the thing about plates. They're all moving relative to each other. So it gets complicated. It's like a moving puzzle. Actually, this plate B is not this plate B. Now that I've added these boundaries, we call this plate C in North America. And if you go across North America and out to the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, you get a divergent plate boundary, where North America is separating from Europe, and it's going this way. So that's the other end of this plate, is the middle Atlantic, like Iceland area and so on. And this is a Pacific plate, and up that way it goes to the Aleutian Islands of Alaska, and down here it swings on up over towards Japan. And those are both subduction zones, where the big Pacific plate is going down. The other end.
Okay. The Rift Valley has part of it that I think was up to Ethiopia.
Oh, for Africa, yeah.
Yeah. So there's part of that going that way, and now it's going to be.
Yeah, I mean, that's getting a couple plates. That's a couple plates away now.
Okay.
But let me just draw a quick sketch of Africa. So let's see. I'm not very good at Africa, but it kind of comes up, and then something like that. Anyway, I should make this a little bigger. This is the Horn of Africa up here, okay? This is the Red Sea. This is the Red Sea. This is the Arabian Peninsula, okay? And this is Africa, including Saudi Arabia and some other countries up here, and Israel and the Middle East are up here. There's a divergent plate boundary here, so a double line. There's a divergent plate boundary here, so a double line. And then the Rift Valley, a potential divergent plate boundary, maybe it's one that's already existent. It goes down here in this part of Africa. So Arabia was connected to the rest of Africa just a few short million years ago, and already it's spread and formed enough new plate. The kind of plate that ultimately forms the divergent plate boundary is oceanic, thin and dense. It'll get covered by ocean water because it sits low on the Earth. So it's already a seaway in here, the Gulf of Aden and the Red Sea. This part is still breaking. It's unknown if this will keep growing or fade away as a failed divergent plate boundary. Yucca Mountain is, it's in a part of the Mountain West called the Basin and Range, and that's where they, for a while, they think that really fast, really pushing far inland subduction was affecting things, and then that faded away and hot mantle rose up under there, and when that hot mantle rose up, that hot asthenosphere, after that fast-moving plate stopped pushing in on there, it did cause a bunch of volcanism. And it piled up a bunch of thick, quartz-rich, light-colored volcanic rock that is now Yucca Mountain. But the volcanism has been dead for 7 million years, and the volcanic rock is really tight, and it's in the desert where it's really dry. So the hope was, the thinking was, that volcanic rock in an area that's no longer volcanic would make a great storage area for radioactive waste because it's very tight rock that doesn't leak much, and volcanism has long since been dead, is the idea. But then the other question came up is, what about the faults? Some of them may still be active, and the fluids may move along the faults and bring the radioactive material back up to the surface. So last I heard, they're not going to store. I mean, President Obama has taken that off the list, or says he's going to, for storing radioactive waste. So thank you, everybody.